Coming up on this edition of RCN Sports Talk. Referee Joe DiOrio and John Breidinger discuss football rules, officiating, and the upcoming District 11 playoff pictures. Washington Post Eric Goldwine talks DMV high school football and keys the top teams, players, and upcoming matchups to watch, plus the debut of the DC Sports Minute and MLB playoffs, the NFL, and other sports topics, all coming up on this edition of RCN Sports Talk. Brought to you by the Vinart Dealership, your Lehigh Valley Acura, Honda, Hyundai dealers.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Sports Talk. I'm Chris Michael. So glad you could be with us this evening. We'll introduce our special in-studio guest in just a moment, but first we introduce the co-host of the program and the man who claims to have invented the burglar alarm, but before he could cash in and make any money on the deal, he claims it was stolen, Mr. Joseph Linwood. What?
What was that? First of all, what's a burglar alarm?
Burglar alarm.
Hey, listen.
I haven't done this in 3 weeks.
I'm a little rusty here. This is really...
I know. Through the miracle of tape, we have been.
I mean, not live. No. I mean, with actual moving parts.
Well, that's still debatable, too.
Anyway, interesting week.
A lot of good football.
A couple big highlight things and some really good ones coming up. This is a big weekend locally.
Well, before I introduce our guest, Joe, I want to let you in on a little secret here, because we've been blessed over the last 10-plus years to have some wonderful people on our show. Mm-hmm. And whenever possible, I try to find people that are a little opposite from different sides of the tracks for different opposing points of view. Tonight, we might have our most polarizing guests ever. So let me introduce them. One of our guests tonight was an outstanding football player back in his day, has a tremendous wealth of knowledge and insight about the sport, and he works next to one of the brightest and most insightful sports voices in the entire East Coast. Our other guest is John Breidinger. So let's welcome in Joe DiOrio, local local high school official,
there you go.
And RCN's job, own Johnny B, John Breidinger. They're shaking hands already here.
It's nice to have him here.
We're going to talk about your storied past. And a little later on, we're going to tease that for a little bit. But first of all, our tip-off question tonight involves high school football and the officials. And I want to ask you guys, what is the ideal number of officials for a high school football game? Because we've seen a lot of changing the last couple of years. This year alone in the Colonial League, they have five. Joe, wait your turn.
Go ahead, Joe.
So we have seven officials in the Eastern Pennsylvania Conference. Some of the important games in the Colonial League have six officials. When you go to Nutropoli, there's six officials.
Seven.
They have seven.
Yes.
But when they're on the road, there's five. So there's a lot of change. And to your guys' credit, I've seen a lot of people, a lot of the same names switching from five, six, and seven man crews. And you've done a pretty good job. But what is the ideal number of officials for a high school game? Well, Joe DiOrio, we'll start with you.
I do believe that seven is the perfect number. And this year, we're getting a chance to do it on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. In past years, we only used seven for playoffs and states and past the districts. But this year, we started with the EPC using seven. Yep. Now, of course, it's a new positions, and it's a learning curve. So officials are going to have to learn their responsibilities in their different positions. Mm-hmm. But as you said, this year, the officials have been doing a good job. The good thing is we're including a lot younger officials in the game.
Yeah.
More officials are working. But beyond that is that there's more eyes on the game. You know, you've got 14 eyeballs on 22 kids rather than 10. So as we progress and as we get more experience with the seven-man crew, and people learn and know their responsibilities better as we get experience, seven is by far the best.
And that's a good point you mentioned about the influx of youth, because it seemed like for several years there wasn't as many new referees coming out, new officials, and the ones that did come out weren't staying around very long. It didn't seem as dedicated, but now we're starting to see people stick around and really hone their craft.
Exactly. I remember when we started, several officials and I started back in the early 90s, and it took you 5 years maybe to get a varsity game. Mm-hmm. Now, some of the officials, they get them their first year, which is great. And the more experience that they get, it's better for everyone, especially with the speed of the game. it's almost like basketball now, where you know two men can't handle a Liberty Parkland men's basketball's basketball game. You need three men. The game is getting so fast, and it simulates to football. The kids are so big and so quick, and as we get older, it's harder to keep up with them. So seven men, by far, in my opinion, is the way to go.
Johnny B., how about you? You see a lot of high school football.
Well, in my opinion, the most ideal number of officials would be one, because then you could do whatever you wanted. No, I'm kidding. No, I think that I agree with Joe. I think that while it sounds like a lot, all the things about speed and all that makes a lot of sense to me. Mm-hmm. However, I think that what I understand they do at the upper levels is they divide the field in sections to a degree, so that you don't have, for example, the deep back judge, you know, maybe throwing a flag 40 yards to show his arm off on a holding call at the line of scrimmage or things like that. I think that will come, as you said, Joe, in with experience and with time and figuring all that out. But I think what has to happen more is that zoning, if you will, of the field. And I think that'll happen. My own opinion. I just like it. You know, it's hard to keep it consistent. That's a key thing. Mm-hmm.
Joe, how about you?
I don't think there's ever enough, because I think they all cheat.
Wait, who's they all cheat? What is that?
There's no betting in high school football.
No, I guess seven's a good number. I mean, you know, it's high school's so different. You watch the pros and the colleges, and you see what they do. Seven's a good number. I think you need to have those extra guys. I think one of the biggest advantages really is now you got somebody who can watch the sideline and see what's going on with things going on the sideline. That to me, is as a guy who coached and was involved on all three levels of coaching. To me, that's a lot of abuses were taking place. Now with seven officials, you've got a lot more control with that. I think with the extra eyes on the field, situations like last year's playoff game with Parkland.
Don't bring that up again.
No, but I mean with the extra couple sets of eyes, I think it helps. I think the Pittsburgh-Easton game with the fair catch controversy last year, with those extra officials, I think that helps the situation. So I think seven's a good number.
And to your point as well, there's a lot of gray areas during, for instance, a punt, where with five men, the back judge has the receiver, the linesman and the line judge are on the line. Between the line of scrimmage and the receiver, there's that area where things could happen, and with five men, nobody sees it.
Right.
With the side judge now and the field judge, that's what their responsibility is, watching that intermediate zone between the goal or the line of scrimmage and the receiver. So he can look for the blocks in the back, he can look for the face mask, they can look for the holding. So, you know, I know a lot of people don't like flags, but you know, if there's a foul, it should be called.
And call
you know, with seven, as we get more experience, keeping our eyes where we should, we'll catch all those fouls.
All right. We're going to pick your brain for some more rules, interpretations, and discussions a little later in tonight's program. By the way, we're going to do an unofficial poll here. A big game, of course, tomorrow night, Notre Dame versus Saucon Valley. It's going to be on RCN tape delay starting at 10 o'clock. If you go on our Facebook page at Sports Talk THURS, you can vote for either Saucon Valley or Notre Dame, and we'll see who's who gets more votes as far as who's going to win that game tomorrow. The Crusaders or the Panthers, and again, that's at Sports Talk, THURS. You can retweet for Saucon Valley, or you can hit the favorite button if you're rooting for Notre Dame or think the Crusaders will win that game. Speaking, though, of some big ball games, the standings, of course, came out. First, we're going to take a look at the high school football poll, the Sports Talk football poll. It's our second last week, and we had quite a few changes from our previous poll, too. So in a moment, we're going to take a look at that, and John and Joe, you can weigh in on where the big schools and the 4A teams in particular, how they shook out. For the record, our number one team is Parkland, back to a unanimous choice following their win over Freedom last week. They got all 11 first-place votes. Easton moves back up into the number two spot with an impressive showing against Liberty. Freedom was third. Liberty falls to fourth. And Nazareth fifth. And, of course, more information available on our polls on the RCN website at rcn.com/RCNTV. But, John and Joe, your thoughts on the bigger schools?
I think they have them right. And, again, week to week, that could change. And but the way the games went last weekend, Easton beating Liberty, that was That was key. And it throws that whole league, into that whole division, into a quandary right now, because I think everyone's either has one loss or two losses. And now we're getting to the end of the season, and the last 2 weeks are going to make or break their season.
Yeah, and in fact, before you guys weigh in, let's just go over the 4A standings. Wyoming Valley West and Parkland already have clinched the spot. Wyoming Valley West is probably in good shape to win or get one of the top two seeds, which would qualify them for home through at least the semifinals. Delaware Valley is probably going to get in. Freedom, Easton, and Liberty should be in, but then you're left with two spots to be fought out between Stroudsburg, Nazareth, and Pleasant Valley, the leading teams, with Whitehall and Emmaus right now looking on the outside. But John and Joe, your thoughts on how the 4A is shaping up?
Go ahead, Joe. Well, I think there's two big weekends coming up, this weekend and next weekend. I mean, look at Liberty sitting there. They've got to play. They've got a really big game this week with Central Catholic, who is not a pushover. And then they've got the Freedom game next week. You know, if Liberty loses both those games, 6-4 ain't going to get in. I don't think it's a sure thing. By the same token, Freedom's got the same situation. They could end up with three losses. I don't think anybody with three losses, you could be in jeopardy of not getting in. I just believe that. Yeah, so Freedom's in the same boat. You know?
And I agree, because especially with these other teams that are in these other leagues, maybe not the same kind of, you know,
exactly,
they don't have the competition.
Which we're going to address later, by the way.
So I think that's a real issue. But I think that Freedom and Easton, to me, that's going to be a great game.
Yeah.
And a big game
we'll
for both schools. Because, number one, Freedom will have, at least what I read this week in the newspaper, that Joe Young will be back playing quarterback. Mm-hmm. And as we saw last week against Parkland, while Jake Gundrum did a yeoman's job in there and did a great job for not having played much of it all year, and he's a terrific athlete, but the key thing was that Freedom lost a wide receiver, their best wide receiver, and one thing that I tried to emphasize last week, that Jake Gundrum Jonah Gundrum is a terrific special teams player, blocked a couple kicks, blocked some punts. He did not do any, was not on that special team at all last week. This time, he's back on that. That makes a difference in that Easton game and Freedom's total performance. So this will be key, but I think that Parkland certainly proved that the way they played Friday night, that they should be the number one in our area.
All right, we'll continue the Pennsylvania high school football talk in just a minute, plus our trivia coming up and a chance to win a very nice prize. But right now, let's head down to Washington and bring in from the Washington Post, Eric Goldwine, who does an outstanding job covering high school sports down in the D.C. Area. Eric, welcome to RCN Sports Talk, first of all.
All right, thanks for having me.
It was my pleasure, and I've been reading you for the last 2 months online at the Washington Post. You really do a good job, very thorough with all your insights, and really enjoyed reading your articles. So I appreciate that. I know your main area, your primary area as far as coverage area, you focus mostly on Montgomery County, but you get a chance to go around and see other teams as well. Who are some of the teams that have really stuck out in your mind so far this year?
Yes, we're going to start with Gonzaga. They were on TV a couple weeks ago. They're a perennial power in the Washington Catholic Athletic Conference, and they kind of shocked the area with a win over DeMatha, then a win over Good Counsel last week. Those are two really really strong teams that have had national reputation. They got this running back Tyree Randolph. He's a little guy, only 5'7", but he's already got 1,000 yards on the ground. He's really carrying their ground game. And they got a big receiver, Max Fisher. I don't know if you caught the game, but he had really one of the most impressive catches I've seen at any level this year. But yeah, they're our number one ranked team in the area, and they've basically done everything they could possibly do in the last couple months.
Yeah. You mentioned DeMatha and Gonzaga on a national stage on ESPN. I mean, those guys are used to being on a national stage. What's it like to have so many powerhouse teams ranked nationally in that area and butting heads during the regular season and then once again during the playoffs?
Yeah, well, it makes it easy on us. It gives us some really good football to cover. That's first of all. And as you mentioned, these teams are pretty used to getting that attention. Gonzaga or DeMatha was on TV earlier in the year. Gonzaga was on ESPN last year. The new if you're a 17, 16-year-old kid, you're probably not used to being in the spotlight like that. But in these schools, it's not routine, but it's not that out of the ordinary. But yeah, it does kind of generate a little buzz for the local football scene here.
You mentioned a couple of the names. Who are some of the other names that have stood out? Because we're talking not just about great football players in that area, but players, once again, that are nationally ranked, the top 100 prospects across the country. Who have stood out in your mind that you've seen?
We'll bring it out to Maryland. They at Damascus. They play in the 3A league. They have not lost a game yet, and they got this running back. You got to see him to really understand what he does. His name's Jake Funk. He just committed to Maryland 2 weeks ago, and he's big. He's strong. He's fast. He's putting up 150, 200 yards a game, and the crazy part is he's out of the game by halftime. So he's really the one that stuck out to me the most. I haven't been everywhere. There's a lot of really good players in the area, and you got over in Prince George's County, Miles Wolfolk. He's a lockdown defensive back. I'm sure you'll be seeing him, hearing his name in the future. He's a Virginia Tech recruit. And then Shane Simmons over at DeMatha. He's a lineman, and he'll be headed to Penn State next year, but he's really given quarterback fits, not just this year, but over the last couple of seasons.
Our special guest is Eric Goldwine from the Washington Post, does a great job covering high school sports down there. Are there any surprise teams or players that really came off the radar? You mentioned the big upset over DeMatha by a couple weeks ago from Gonzaga. Any big surprises elsewhere in the D.C. region or Maryland or Virginia area?
Yeah, so we'll talk about Sherwood. I was at the game last week. They're 7-1, but they haven't lost on the field. They had to forfeit their season opener due to an ineligible player, but they've been really just as good as any team I've seen. I got a text from their coach before the season telling me to look out because they have a big line and they got a running back, Travis Levy, who really has the total package, and they got a receiver, Marcus Sims. He's a West Virginia commit. And their offense is just incredibly dynamic with those two. And they also carry a defense. Those guys play in the secondary. Last week, I saw Sherwood beat Paint Branch, which they're two Montgomery County rivals. People thought it was going to be a really close game. Sherwood came in and kind of made their mark early and escaped with a pretty convincing victory. So they're a four Maryland 4A team that really has a shot to win it all. And that's another team that deserves some attention. Maybe not a state championship contender, but a really fun story here. Richard Montgomery, they went 2-8 last season and the season before, and this year they're off to a 7-1 start. They've really turned it around, and they have a chance to get in the playoffs, which would be a really good thing for that school after a couple bad seasons.
Yeah. You mentioned the playoffs coming up. Where are we at in terms of the D.C. region, in terms of the regular season, and what are some of the big games to watch as the playoffs start to take shape down in the D.C. area?
Yeah, so we're on week 9 of a 10-week season for Maryland and Virginia. D.C. is a little different, but the way Maryland works is you got week 9, week 10, and then you got the playoffs starting up. Teams are really kind of fighting for the spots there. Virginia has six state tournaments, and that'll also happen at the same time. It's the playoff picture is getting pretty tricky here. But I'll be at tomorrow night. I'll be at a big game between two teams that are probably going to be in there anyway. Seneca Valley, they're in Montgomery County in Germantown, and Damascus, as I mentioned before, are gonna play basically to get a top seed in the 3A Maryland tournament. You got plenty of you got McNamara there in the Washington Catholic Athletic Conference playing St. John's. You got over in Prince George's County a big game between Eleanor Roosevelt and Suitland, who are always a threat to win the Maryland title. So it's some really big games coming up as we close out the season here.
Yeah. Well, Eric, thanks so much for your time. We appreciate your insights, and we invite everyone to keep following you at the Washington Post and online at the Washington Post website.
All right. Cool. Thanks for having me.
All right. Our pleasure. Thank you very much. Eric Goldwine, outstanding writer for the Washington Post covering high school sports. We're going to be getting back to the Pennsylvania High School football talk, our trivia question, and our prize giveaways all coming up in just a second. But starting tonight and on upcoming editions of Sports Talk, we'll be featuring some of the top teams and players from the D.C. region, a number of the teams and players nationally ranked. And we'll introduce our first feature. It's called the DKN Sports Minute.
This is your DKN Sports Minute. The 5-2 Blue Knights hosted the 4-4 HD Woodson Warriors, who are looking for payback from an early season loss to Ballou. With time running out, Ballou comes roaring back as freshman running back number 21 Jamal Speaks runs off tackle and turns on the Jets to a 93-yard touchdown. Warriors still up 26-18. Last chance for Ballou as Delonte Moore comes up big with a desperate score. Two-point conversion good, game tied at 26 as time runs out. In overtime, after a failed series by Ballou, number 7 Michael Salahuddin takes the handoff and breaks for the pylon. Referees need to confer on this one. It is a touchdown. Warriors win in overtime. This has been your DKN Sports Minute.
Welcome back to RCN Sports Talk. Our special in-studio guest, Joe DiOrio, local football official, and John Breidinger from the RCN Sports Department, joining Joe Craig and myself. Before we continue our conversations with them, time for the trivia, trying to see what question we have out there. Joe Craig will criticize what question I came up with, but we go to the NFL. What New York Giant running back set the team's all-time yards rushing record with 234? He did this against the Washington Redskins. So who set the Giants' all-time yards rushing record with 234 wasn't all that too far ago.
But if Charlie Henry is home and he hears this, he will call on this. He's a big Giants. He knows.
Is that your lock of the day?
He knows everything.
All right. And here's more information on how and what you can win.
You could win a $10 gift certificate to use to see the latest movies and the hottest music, sports, and pay-per-view events on RCN On Demand. You can only win one gift certificate every 4 months. But if you haven't won a prize in the last 30 days, you may be able to win another great prize. Call or email us right now with your trivia response. Callers get priority. But if we don't get a caller with the correct answer during tonight's live sports talk show, we'll take all email responses and conduct a random drawing on our next live show to determine the winner. Watching the show on replay or VOD? Send us your guess now, and you just might win an RCN On Demand $10 certificate. Good luck with Sports Talk Trivia.
And that question one more time. What New York Giant running back set the team's all-time yards rushing record with 234? He did it against the Washington Redskins. That's tonight's trivia prize. Joe and John, of course, are with us. Before we continue talking about the district playoff picture and the polls and so forth, we have some incriminating pictures of Joe DiOrio that I know football coaches are going to want to TiVo and DVR for some chatter down the upcoming weeks of the high school football season. So John actually provided us with some of these pictures. So we're going to bring them up on screen. And Mr. Breidinger is going to take us through exactly what we're looking at here. Who is this, John?
Well, number 24 there is Joe DiOrio.
Yeah.
And it was the third Lark, now called McDonald's game, that was ever played. It was the third one. Joe DiOrio and I were fortunate enough to be in there, and somehow Wilson played on the city teams, and we were beating the suburban team so badly that they took their starting defensive back and put him in a quarterback. Is that about right?
That's correct.
And that's why he's in that picture.
I remember that.
Getting probably hammered by, I want to say a guy named Gary Kisak from Freedom, and a bunch of other guys. But we had a lot of fun in that game. And
Kisak would have been on that.
Joe, you can refute anything he says.
No,
during
he's pretty accurate so far.
But we had a lot of fun playing that game, and it was fun to come in contact with the other schools and so forth. So,
Let's take a look at the next one too, because we have two guys. The one I picked out right away. Here's the more recent picture too. Tell us a little bit about this, because it was new back then. As John said, that was just the third year when you played in it.
It was called the Lark Game back then, right. And we had a 40-year reunion?
Like a 40-year reunion, 40-year or reunion. 30, whatever year that was.
Well, 73 to, it must have been 13.
But that group was from our group of maybe 4 or 5 years.
Yes. Oh, that's right. Yeah, that was a combination of the team, 72 to 76.
Yeah, I know it's got to be about 10 years ago, because that's when I was at one of my thinnest points.
And of course, John's still wearing his beloved blue and gold from Wilson.
There you go.
Right?
Right. Yep.
And
I didn't know he was from Wilson.
Yeah, that's why he's got the blue and gold on. I think I have a purple shirt on in the middle.
But people did make the comment at that point, Joe, that there were only two guys in that picture that could actually still have played, and that was you and me.
I appreciate that. We absolutely will.
All right, now we'll look at an older picture here. Joe, I picked you out right away. John, I had to get a magnifying glass, and Kathy Nealon had to highlight it for us. There you can see John Breidinger on the top from about 4 over from the left, and Joe Diora's down at the lower right. What do you think of yourselves?
Well, back then, we had to keep our hair short because going to Catholic school. So that was after we graduated. It was in the summer. So I got to wear my hair longer. So I didn't usually wear it that long, but we got a little creative.
And you guys
what year was that?
1973.
Oh, wow. And you guys would then go on and face off against each other at college,
We did.
Yeah, Joe Diorio actually still looks exactly the same. I have
John
not looked that young in a long,
John
long time.
Great
That's
too.
Why you didn't know who I was. But the last year I played football was freshman year at Lafayette, and I had been injured that year and got to get back in and got to play against Lehigh, and there he was playing defensive back for Lehigh. And a guy that played next to me in that game was a guy named Richard Lang.
Jeez.
From Allentown Central Catholic.
And he
played on that Lehigh team.
Correct.
So, and that was the last time I played. I don't know if, did you play longer then?
Yeah,
did you?
I did.
But I
remember that because that was the first year that freshmen were allowed to play college football, 1973. Yeah. It was the first year that before that they just had freshman teams and only sophomores through seniors could play college. That was the first year that freshmen were allowed to play. But
we still had a freshman team, though.
Well, but we still had a freshman team. Yeah. Correct, but that was that game. We ended up 5-0, and you know who our coach was?
Who was that?
The Lehigh freshman coach, the first team in Lehigh history freshman to go undefeated, Jeep Bednarik. Do you remember Ed Hudak?
Yeah,
sure.
Ed Hudak was our line coach.
How about that?
We had, the gentleman from Washington and Jefferson. The head coach he coached at Lehigh for a long time, John Luckhart.
Luckhart.
Remember John Luckhart?
That's the guy I took in place of when I went to Lehigh.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I came in and
John Luckhart was our coach. Then we played, that was the first year that Lehigh played in the NCAAs. We played Western Kentucky, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Kim DeQuilkin was a quarterback. My brother Don was a running back. Jack Rizzo.
Jack Rizzo.
Remember that team?
Yep. They were a great team.
Yeah, it was the first year that, and then in postseason they were allowed to pick up freshmen on the roster. So it's exciting.
I'd have to worry about that at all.
Well, let's go to the phone lines. We have a guest in here, Tony. Tony, welcome to RCN Sports Talk.
You got it.
I believe you want to talk to Joe about something. Joe Diorio here.
Yeah, the thing I wanted to ask Joe is why his hair was so short in high school. And then
must be
after
one of your
high
buddies.
School, got to be the way he liked it.
I always had curly hair, but in high school we had to suppress it because the nuns wouldn't allow afros back then. So we had to keep it.
But I think that maybe you and Danny and
I know who this is.
Baseball.
I know who this is. This is Coach Caraccio from Pleasant Valley.
Yeah, well, not a Pleasant Valley.
Pleasant Valley.
But yeah, in the old days.
The old days,
but
right.
Joe and
my cousin Danny.
And a bunch of other people played baseball for me.
Yes.
And if they had their hair that got out of control, I became the barber.
Yeah, well, no, you took us to the barber. You remember?
Yeah, I know.
That's funny.
And if that didn't work, if it wasn't good enough, I cut it myself. I remember Danny really, you know, getting out of control because he didn't want me to cut his hair.
Yep.
Okay. But anyway, I also remember that All-Star game that year. If I remember correctly, didn't it end up sort of in a little fisticuff?
Yes, at the end of the game, there was a little... problem on the sidelines.
I know who started it.
Who?
Two kids from Liberty.
That's correct. And my
Wayne
cousin.
Fadabin?
No.
Wayne,
that's really not true.
And Butchie Horvath.
Wayne didn't start the
play. And I think my cousin Danny was at Patino was involved.
I think he was
in the right coach.
I remember.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember.
I was going to say, don't lie about it.
No, I know. Danny was involved.
You and Danny had a little bit to
do
with that.
But Coach Colt coached me at Pius for all my career there, and then he went to Pleasant Valley for a very successful coaching career. And we still keep in touch. A very good friend of mine.
Good to hear from him.
I'm sorry?
It's good to hear from him.
Thanks for calling in, Coach.
Yeah, thank you very much for your phone call, Tony.
It was great seeing you on TV. And hopefully we'll be lucky enough to get you for one of the playoff games at Northwestern.
Well, I appreciate that. Thanks.
Okay, John.
Thanks for the call.
All right, let's get a couple emails here before our next break. First of all, Lou from Wingap, he wants to ask Joe, doesn't specify which Joe, but ask Joe to name the last school to mercy rule Parkland.
That's Joe Craig.
Well, if the mercy rule was in effect, I'd say when you played, Joe Craig.
Well, they didn't have mercy rule when
I
played.
I know.
Otherwise,
just said.
I'm sure it would have been called a number of times.
I can't remember the last time.
There was a stretch there in the 70s when Parkland was pretty poor. And they weren't very good. And I would say it's probably back in that time. But even the mercy rule, I'm not sure when that came in, but I don't think they had it.
About 10 years ago.
Yeah, I was going to say
15 years ago.
I don't know. Have they ever been mercy ruled? I don't know the answer to that.
I mean, even when they were down, they were, you know, not.
No, they were down.
For a while there. Since the mercy rule came into effect.
Oh, no, not in the last 10 years.
No, I don't think
that bad.
So
do they have an answer?
No, Lou just wants to.
Lou, I don't know the answer to that. I'm not sure anybody's ever mercy ruled Parkland. Not in the last 8 or 10 years. But maybe they have, and I just don't know.
Yeah, maybe
that.
If someone knows the answer to that,
anybody knows, text us and let us know.
By the way, here, did you tell someone to email?
No.
Because I warned you about bringing up the Parkland St. Joe's game.
I do not
want to put Joe on the spot and have him criticize, you know, other officials outside of District 11.
No.
Carl from Whitehall wants to know your thoughts on Parkland St. Joe's. But, I mean, you know, you can answer that if you want, but, you know.
Well, we're all human. And sometimes when you're in that situation and you're in a seven-man crew and you're not comfortable in a position you're in, you might be looking for things that aren't your responsibility. So it might have been a case where everybody was looking away from that lineman and wasn't disciplined enough to maintain their own responsibility. That's the only explanation I can come up with.
Someone on this panel has complained about this 7 or 8 times recently.
I've been a gentleman tonight, have I not?
You have
so
been.
Far.
Right.
So
thank
Carl,
you
thank
much.
You for the email,
you.
And I hope Joe Craig has paid you well for having him twist your arm to send in that email here. Don't forget, you can vote on our Twitter page. My handle, Sports Talk, THURS. You can retweet for Saucon Valley or favorite for Notre Dame. We'll have the results a little later in tonight's program, getting a good response there. Also, we have some phone callers online for the trivia. We'll get to them right after this timeout. But right now it is time for Thumbs Up, Thumbs Down, where our panelists identify someone in the world of sports for doing something extraordinarily well, or perhaps single out someone or group for doing something not so good. I'll go first, and real quickly, I got two. First of all, from Tom Weaver, our friend up in Nazareth. No, this is from Tom Weaver. He's a loyal viewer. He had one here. He wanted me to mention Ed Chrisman, former Nazareth coach, celebrating his 102nd birthday this week.
Oh, my goodness.
Happy birthday to Coach Chrisman up there.
God bless him.
Still doing well up in the Nazareth community. Yeah. And thanks, Tom, for pointing that out. Ed Chrisman celebrating his 102nd birthday today. And, Joe, you should appreciate this. this is from Joe Stellato. They have their annual event on Tuesday evening coming up November 3rd at 7 p.m. at BASD Stadium, Frank Banco Field. $2 a ticket for the Liberty Freedom Faculty Flag Football Game. It's raising money for both the Race for Adam Foundation and the St. Luke's Hospice. All the activities start at 5:30 with a series of midget teams The Saints, the Raiders, the Bulldogs, the Steelers are all
right,
competing.
All the feeders,
and then the Liberty and Freedom faculties go head-to-head. And I'm asking you, please, guys, on Liberty, go easy on Joe Stellato, the quarterback of the Freedom football team, because he has to coach in a few weeks. We want to see him out there. We'll
former Liberty
the
athlete, Joe Stellato.
Don't go there. All right, Joe, go ahead. Your thumbs up, thumbs
oh,
down.
Oh, my thumbs up. My thumbs up's got to be after 8 weeks. I got to give a thumbs up to Notre Dame football program. You know, they were the dregs of the league last year. I think they were 0-9, 10, whatever it was. And I got to give them credit for the turnaround this year. That's big.
Mr. DiIorio?
I have to say thumbs up to the Kansas City Royals, although they're beating my New York Mets. They just refused to lose. They hit the ball, put the ball in play, and the Mets pitchers are phenomenal, but they just can't seem to get them out in a critical situation. Yeah. I know that we're only down 2-0 in 1986. We were down 2-0 against the Red Sox, and we came back to win that World Series. So, but the Kansas City Royals look like they're on a mission.
All right, and Mr. Brettinger
feels that way, too.
Well, since you had two, I'll have two questions, too. First of all, I'd like to congratulate and give a thumbs up to the Panargil football team. Very difficult for me to do as a Wilson graduate, which is well known. But that was Panargil's first win this year. They've had a lot of challenges this year as a team, and it was a great win for the team, for the players, for the people that come out and support Panargil every week, as we've seen over the years, and a big win for the staff. So that's number one. Number two, I'd like to give a thumbs up to really one of my favorite officials ever, a guy named Jake Boylan. Jake Boylan, a former Easton quarterback, threw a lot of flags at me over the years, but a great person and a fair person. He's recovering from some leg surgery, and he's doing fine, but I wanted to make sure that he knew that I was thinking of him on a night that we're speaking with a first-class official in Joe DiIorio tonight.
Good. All right. And a reminder, we have a trivia question. A New York Giant running back set the all-time yards rushing mark with 234. We'll see if we can get a correct answer right after this timeout.
I guess I should.
This is the RCN Sports Talk Podcast. Interact with us by sending us your sports comments, questions, and opinions right now or anytime via email to rcnsportstalk@rcn.com. And we may read and respond to your emails on an upcoming program. That's rcnsportstalk@rcn.com. Give and get sports opinions by visiting our sports blogs at rcn.com/rcntv, where you can also get updates on sports news and features on teams in the RCN coverage area. Stay tuned. The RCN Sports Talk podcast resumes in 60 seconds. Don't forget, you can send us your feedback and sports comments and questions at any time by emailing us at rcnsportstalk@rcn.com. Or speak with us directly on air during the program's live airing on RCN TV starting at 7 p.m. on Thursday evenings at 1-844-234-4488. Now, here's more of the RCN Sports Talk podcast. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to RCN Sports Talk. Our special in-studio guests, Joe DiOrio and John Reidinger. Our thanks to Eric Goldwein from the Washington Post, who joined us early to talk about football down in the D.C. region. Let's go to the phone lines first. Gene from Northampton wants to take a shot at our trivia question. Gene, welcome to RCN Sports Talk.
Yes, sir. First of all, I'd like to commend you guys on the job you do down on RCN.
Thank you.
And,
thank you.
I just want to say, Joe might like this. My wife is a hard Giant fan, and I'm an Eagle fan. And it gets interesting here when the two teams play.
I'll bet it does.
Yeah, especially when they play each other.
Anyway, I got to say that she says, speaking of Barber, she thinks it was Tiki Barber.
Oh, very good.
Very good.
Tiki
you
Barber,
got it.
December 30th, 2006.
About
yep.
that.
Yep.
200 and how many yards was it, Chris?
234.
234 yards, yeah. Good one. You get it. You win the prize.
Yep.
And she wins the prize.
Yeah. Well, even if you won it, you know she's going to get it, right?
Without a doubt.
All right. Well, Gene, we appreciate you giving us a call this evening.
All right. Thank you.
Well, thanks, Gene.
You keep up the good work.
Thank you very much. And we'll pass it along to all the other guys.
You're welcome. Bye-bye now.
Thanks.
I get to take credit when John Breidinger and all the color analysts do all the work. Here, so. Nice job I have here.
You do have it made.
Sit back and let you guys do all the hard work.
And you
work.
Get to be with me every week. It's
well, that's...
that's the one drawback, right?
By the way, again, we're having some voting going on here for the Notre Dame Saucon Valley game. I am shocked here at the votes. We have 7 votes for Saucon Valley, 69 for Notre Dame.
Wow.
69 right now voting for Notre Dame, 7 for Saucon Valley. You have a few minutes left in our show. You can vote on our Twitter page. Handle is at Sports Talk Thurs, THURS, Sports Talk THURS, and you can vote either for Saucon Valley or Notre Dame.
It's going to be a great game.
Yes, it is. Either way, it's going to be a great game. And once again, we'll have that on tape delay tomorrow night at 10 o'clock. All right, speaking of Notre Dame and Saucon Valley, let's take a look at the Sports Talk Small School poll. Our first major change since week one. Saucon Valley had taken over the number one spot, but our pollsters deciding that Bethlehem Catholic, off another big win over Stroudsburg, a 4A school last week, was enough to push them back into the number one spot. Saucon Valley just edged out at the number two spot. Becca got 6 first place votes, Saucon got 4, then Notre Dame 3rd, Central Catholic 4th, and Northwestern 5th. Guys, your thoughts on the small school poll. John Breidinger, we'll start with you.
Well, I think while Becca has a fine team, we had them the first game of the year, we saw them. I don't think they're as strong as they were last year, where I think Saucon Valley is much stronger than they were last year. Saucon Valley started a lot of sophomores and juniors last year. Those sophomores and juniors have turned into juniors and seniors and have spent a lot of time in the weight room. I got to see them up close a few weeks ago at Wilson, and I will tell you that they were very impressive physically and just poise-wise, and they are the class of that league, and it will be very interesting. Their class of league, and I think that it will be very interesting if they meet Bethlehem Catholic again in the playoffs. We had that game last year, and I think Saucon Valley would love nothing more than to play them again.
Yep. All right, and as we take a look at the District 11 3A standings, we'll get Joe and Joe's comments here. But the standings coming into week 9, Bethlehem Catholic, the number one seed, 7-1. They have 767 power points, followed by Lee Heighton, Saucon Valley, and Jim Thorpe. There are the top 4 teams. Top 4 teams qualify for District 11 3A. As of right now, Central Catholic is on the outside looking in at 5-3, but they have Liberty, a 4A school, and then if they would beat the Hurricanes, they get a ton of power points. And then they have Becca week 10, which of course would give the Hawks a loss and would put the Vikings up. So Central Catholic still very much in the hunt, but they have 2 very solid opponents to go up against. Joe and Joe, your thoughts?
All right, Joe.
I believe that the standings are probably as accurate as the poll that you have, the RCN poll. And I have Bethlehem Catholic, and they're a good team. Mm-hmm. And they'll be hard to beat. They have many athletes on the team. But I haven't seen Saucon this year, so I don't know what their strengths are. They obviously are a very good team. So it's going to be interesting towards the end of the year.
Yeah. Mr. Craig?
Well, Saucon Valley has a running back by the name of Culver, who's one of the best running backs in the area. But Becca High plays a big school schedule. And when you play all 4A schools primarily, you're going to – and you win most of your games, which they're – I think they're 7-1 right now, and they're probably going to finish at least 8-2, 9-1, something like that. It's hard to buck them as the higher-ranked team because of the competition they're playing against. and that's to Saucon Valley's district. Thing that surprised me about that posting was the lack of Southern Lehigh not being considered. I thought Southern Lehigh was one of the better teams, actually, that I've seen. And those five that were on there, if there's a number five, Northwestern, 5B, I think is Southern Lehigh. I think they're that good.
Well, they're a bigger school then.
Enrollment
is 400.
I understand, but we don't talk.
Well,
about
why wouldn't
that.
You consider them for the big school then? Why don't you
well,
have them in your
poll? Because you told me
them?
That they're considered a small school.
No, they're not. They're over right. 400.
Anyway, I
we've only been doing this 10 and a half years, Joe. I don't change the rules.
I think Southern Lehigh is a very good football team, but I think that was pretty accurate.
The problem with Southern Lehigh is that they play in a predominantly
league. And when they beat teams that are two-way, you don't get as many points.
They don't get as many points, and they play teams that don't have wins. Because you pick up power points, you not only pick up points right. by the level of competition, but you also pick up their wins.
Well, and the other thing
I want to bring
difficult.
Up the 2A standings here, and then you can comment on this, Joe. Notre Dame undefeated, 8-0 heading into their game against Saucon Valley. They are number one. They have clinched the district playoff spot regardless of what happens the last 2 weeks. Then Northwestern, Salisbury, North Schuylkill is the number four team. Northern Lehigh Palisades along with Palmerton and Tamaqua, they have to have quite a few things to go right to get in. Northern Lehigh does play Northwestern coming up here, so that could be a big win and help the Bulldogs out. But your thoughts on 2A?
On 2A, I think that's pretty accurate. North Schuylkill is a pretender this year, in my opinion. I've seen them on TV up in the Pocono Mountains where I spent a lot of time, and quite frankly, I think they're a pretender. I don't think they could stay with half the Colonial League teams this year. I wanted to go back to the AAA. Lehigh ranked number two, I think. To me, that's a little suspect because of the competition they're playing against. I think they were third, right behind Saucon Valley. To me, that's hard to judge. I think when they get into a game against a Becca High or a Saucon Valley, I think maybe the difference will show.
All right. Right now it's time for the roundtable part of our show. The roundtable is a variety of local, regional, and national sports issues that our panelists do not know about prior to their arrival in the studio. Always looking forward to entertaining you. Don't leave Joe DiOrio here. Hold on to him here. Joe DiOrio hanging with us here. John Breidinger, thank you for holding on. Boy, you grabbed it. Why couldn't you grab him like that back in the playing days?
Because I figured he'd call holding. He'd call holding.
I would have.
All right, topic number one here. And unfortunately, we can't show you the video because we don't have the rights to this. But go on Google and look up Kendrick Perkins Travel. And you can see it on YouTube here. In fact, there's someone broke it down in slow motion. It is the one of the worst officiating non-calls I have ever seen. He took literally nine steps with the basketball during a pro NBA game. So I'm going to put Mr. DiOrio, an official here, on the spot and say, do you have any excuse? Because I showed you the video before we came
what
on the
I
air.
What I think was he was practicing a dance step.
He turned around. And
I think he was practicing a dance step that he just
music,
learned.
Music
they must have been
the
playing
loud.
Music, and he got into his rhythm, and he couldn't stop moving. That's my only explanation.
Bill Russell used to say, well, they're just little steps when Bill played. Little steps. So, but I didn't know what a moving pick was until somebody called one on me, so I didn't even know that was a travel violation.
Yeah, Joe, you even have to admit that was
I saw it. Oh, that was
bad. Unbelievable.
That was bad.
That was unbelievable.
Pro basketball, there's so much traveling in basketball
and the NBA
nowadays.
Too.
Yeah, but even for the NBA.
The
I mean,
NBA.
It used to four or five steps,
even bad
but nine
for
steps.
For the NBA, that was bad. That was like Baryshnikov. I mean, it was.
Topic number two, who has the better offense right now, the Eagles or the Redskins? And I just want to point out that a certain co-host sitting next to me 6 weeks ago said Kirk Cousins doesn't belong in the same field as the Eagles' offense. He was just named the NFC Offensive Player of the Week.
Where
you lambasted.
I never said Kirk Cousins didn't belong on the field. When did
just
I
show
ever?
Him the tape after the show. We'll skip you now. John Breidinger, what are your thoughts? Who is the better offense right now?
He
the high-powered Eagles offense. Watch it on VOD for crying out loud. I saw you. You'll see it. Go ahead. John Breidinger.
I think the Eagles have the better offense. I think their plan is good. I think they have more athletes. I think they should use the tight ends more than they do. And I also think John Gruden made a great point about the Eagle offense and why DeMarco Murray is struggling. But when DeMarco Murray played for Dallas, he started about 10 yards back and had a full head of steam to hit the line. And now in the Eagles offense, it's more wide and he runs to the outside and he doesn't get that head of steam before he cuts up. So I think if they start making a change and look at some of that, they'll get more production out of him.
Mr. DiOrio, real quick, Eagles or Redskins? Who's a better offense right now?
Eagles have the potential to be dangerous, but with a lot of new parts this year, I think they're still feeling their way. I look to them to come on the second half and hopefully make the playoffs.
All right. Right now it is time for Joe's Take. And Joe gets to sound off and talk about anything that he wants to talk about going on in the world of sports. He can answer that question if he wants, since he's throwing his arms up in the air and complaining. But, Joe, you got 30 seconds. Go.
Well, is it time to panic yet? East Penn Conference set up with football. You know what the statistics tell me this year so far? South, 15 wins. North, 0 wins. 15-0, North versus South. It's really obvious that there's problems there. The alignment and the way it's made up is got to be changed. They got to look at it. It's closer than all the other sports. Stop winding me down. I know it's almost time. But I think they're going to have to look at this, maybe go different kinds of setup. But it's not working right now. There's just too much of a disparity.
All right, our final segment coming up. But right now, it's another DC Sports Minute.
This is the DKN Sports Minute. The 4-1 Bell Griffins faced off against the 3-3 Eastern Ramblers at stake, first place in the DCIAA Stripes division. After a scoreless first quarter, the Ramblers strike first as standout quarterback number 7 Jerome Johnson breaks loose on a scramble and scurries into the end zone. Ramblers up 6-0. After another Ramblers touchdown, Bell strikes as number 1 Charles Brooks throws a 63-yard bomb to Damon Quigley, who outruns the defense on his way to a score. Ramblers up 12-8. Late in the fourth quarter on an improbable 4th-and-13, the Ramblers take control as Johnson does it again. A 15-yard TD. Ramblers up 26-22. With 1 second left, Brooks drops back, throws a desperation pass to number 7, DeJuan Brown, who goes up. He caught it. Game over. Bell Griffins win an emotional thriller, 28-26. This has been the DKN Sports Minute.
You are listening to the RCN Sports Talk podcast. Send us a comment or question, or to participate in the program, email us at rcnsportstalk@rcn.com, and we might read and respond on an upcoming episode. You can also send us possible show topics and future guest suggestions by emailing chris.michael@rcn.net. If you catch the show live, you can call us at 1-844-234-4488 on Thursday evenings between 7 and 8 p.m. That number again, 1-844-234-4488. Stay tuned for more of the RCN Sports Talk podcast. RCN Sports Talk podcast. Send us a comment or question, or to participate in the program, email us at rcnsportstalk@rcn.com, and we might read and respond on an upcoming episode. If you catch the show live, you can call us at 1-844-234-4488 on Thursday evenings between 7 and 8 p.m. Stay tuned for more of the RCN Sports Talk podcast.
Segment of RCN Sports Talk, our special in-studio guests, Joe DiOrio and John Breidinger. During our commercial break, Joe made a prediction that 6 months from now he's going to completely deny. Too.
I said
and
it.
I have witnesses here. We'll bring these guys back
it
in.
It wouldn't surprise
you heard
me
it.
If he did.
All right, topic number 3. I want to put Joe DiOrio here on the spot one more time here. One high school football rule change that should be made. I have a couple, but you're the expert here.
Let's not go that far. There's one that was changed several years ago where defensive pass interference in the past that had been an automatic first down.
Yes.
They changed it now to not an automatic first down. And I was just telling John, we had a situation where Team A had the ball 4th and goal at the 16. throws a pass, defensive interference. Now it's fourth and goal from the 8, throws another pass, defensive pass. Now it's fourth and goal from the 4. They run the ball, they get stopped. So the defense had two defensive pass penalties,
yeah.
And they stop, and now it's their ball. Yeah. There's another one where I think defensive pass interference and the ball is caught. And if the pass is more than 15 yards downfield, the offense has to refuse the penalty or take the play.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know why we can't add that on to the run. There's another pet peeve of mine, kickoffs. Offsides on kickoffs, I don't know why we stop the clock. We should let the play go on, throw the flag, and have the offense have the option of taking 5 yards.
Like a free shot.
Because he kicks the ball, everybody's running. It takes you 5 minutes now to get the ball reset. And
any chance of changing this for next year?
Well, we do have PIAA. We do have forms that we can send in to them with suggested rule changes.
Yeah.
Whether they mention them or discuss them or even consider them, we don't know. But I usually send in a couple every year.
All right, final 30 seconds of Mr. Breidinger.
No, I think it's great to have an official on, especially a good official like Joe DiOrio here to give his input on how some of these things work. And one of the things we also talked about was coaches have to react and ask officials if there is an issue. They have to ask them so they can make the adjustments we talked about.
We're out of time. You can see Joe tomorrow night with Dennis Love starting at 6:30 on RCN TV. And we'll be back with another live edition of Thursday Night Sports Talk next Thursday starting at 7 p.m. For Joe, I'm Chris. Good night, everyone.